Tonight we're going to talk about hell. And the beast was taken with him and the false prophet and wrought miracles before him, which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. Hell. Revelation 19. Hell. Go to hell.
The hell I will.
The hell I will. The hell with you. What the hell? What the hell is hell?
Is it a word?
It's a word.
When you think there's something to do.
No matter what else you say, you've got a great name for the tape tonight. What the hell is hell?
Hell. What?
Are these broadcast quality tapes?
No.
What does hell mean to you? I don't want to hear you. Don't answer. Because it's normally it's someplace that if you're bad you're going to. That's your image from childhood. You can't say hell. Well, somehow, in this 12th labor of Hercules, once that he had been initiated into the rites of the Eleusinian mysteries, he had to be initiated in order to proceed into the underworld, into hell, into Hades, where he captured Cerberus. The guardian of the gates of hell. And much to probably your surprise, the guardian of the gates of hell, his name wasn't Oli.
It was Anthony.
No.
Harry and Barbara.
Yeah.
Harry. Score two for Rick.
Harry and
Barbara.
Yeah.
John Carney.
Yeah. John
Carney.
Now what's this, you have to understand what, I mean, you can't say, okay, Hercules went down into the depths of my hell and captured this guy, or this beast. You have to understand that he went down into the depths of the hell that was extant at that time. You understand? Otherwise it has no meaning. It's like trying to read the Bible without knowing what the situation was. You just apply. So what was the Greek concept of this place called hell or the underworld? What?
I remember I just studied it.
When?
April, May.
Oh. But this doesn't have any meaning unless you have a concept of hell. Does hell mean anything to any of you? I mean, did it ever scare you when you were a kid, or?
Oh yeah.
Did?
I always thought it was the most ludicrous thing I ever heard.
Me too. I used to think that, at least from the way Christians described heaven, I thought that was the boringest thing at all. So I used to think hell, at least hell would be interesting. There'd be all my friends would be there. That's for sure. So.
That was my dad's theory.
Huh?
That was my dad's theory.
But somehow, if we're studying Christ, if we're studying Hercules as a type of Christ, then we have to see in this 12th labor where he went down into the depths and he captured Cerberus, the hound of hell. We have to know what that was talking about and what that means, and if there's any myth, if there's any truth to you in that myth. Otherwise you're just whistling in the dark in here. Do all of you fear punishment? I mean, you think you're going to get punished? Some of you think you're going to get punished every time you open your mouth. For some of you, punishment has no meaning.
Punishment is just something to be escaped. Failure is a bad thing. That's the avoidance of punishment for me. It's just something to run away from.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
The closest,
I know what that means too.
It's not the disapproval. I'm sitting on the hot seat.
As what?
Hell.
Okay.
Go ahead and mock.
I did. What?
I hear that, and I feel pain.
Well, let's see if we can analyze if this keys anything, and you talk about it, because how many of you have been near death? Only one.
I think so.
Yeah,
he qualified.
I think he
qualified. Yeah, he
qualified
in that bad way.
Did you have any kind of epiphany? Did anybody have any kind of epinephrine experience or something memorable that happened at the point of being near death?
The only thing I remember is just get like an incredible amount of panic and then just giving up. You know, and just saying, okay, I'm going to die now, it's okay.
Yeah, that was
the
experience.
I got right to before that.
Tremendous panic, tightness, trying to hold control, somehow like going like this, trying to hold it together.
Sort of like you are when you get in a hot seat?
Sort of. And then the same thing, just going the heck with it.
Yeah,
I had a feeling of uncontrollable fading. Like I wanted to fight that fading feeling, you know what I mean?
Your blood was running out.
Right. Yeah. But I mean,
You were fading.
You were fading.
Yes, I was fading.
Right? No, aren't you talking about when you were on stage one night?
No. It was morning before last.
Yeah, boy.
This morning. The funny thing that I experienced that I've never really fully understood in view of the fact that it's not characteristic of me at all is the incredible calmness.
Yeah.
That is something on me. I do not remember anything that even smacked of fear or concern or anything. It was, I think when I talked to Harry, it was like, hey, you better come over here and I'm going to open the front door because I don't know if I'll be able to open
even
it.
Even then you can come.
When I hearken back to that, and of course in the hospital's no fair because you're so screwed up, you know, anyway, it doesn't matter, but at home alone at 10:30 at night, without the benefit of anything in the way of medication or anything else, I cannot believe how calm I was. And I was probably closer to death than I was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Everything was stabilized by that time.
Well, there are very few things in your life that animate your existence more than the recognition of death, to the experience, the experiencing of your own mortality. And it's central to all meaningful, if you will, experiences in all of history. It's like, it's this cliche that we talk about living your life as though you had 3 minutes to live or 30 seconds to live, or and how quickly you revert back to the mundane when you forget. I mean, I was listening to a conversation between Harry and Rex at lunch or supper tonight, and it was a conversation about it was building up everything both of you had destroyed, or there had been destroyed. It was, in your case, you're going to do anything so you can get money. In Harry's case, he's going to go build this Harry's Manhattan Bar thing. And it's like, they were expressions of life that had not seen death. because they were expressions of pure vanity. I mean, and it was the mindset of pure vanity. And it's like, that's what all of your lives mostly are. I mean, it's like, there's no, you know, you forget that your life is but a breath of, you know, whatever the scriptures talk about. It's a vanishing smoke. It's puff. And so you start singing that song. You don't ever really sing it, but I'm going to live forever. And because you're going to live forever, now you got all this stuff that you're going to do. Well, that's kind of stupid. So anyway, that's a little preamble to the underworld. The Greeks believed that it was not a place, the underworld, or in the Bible, this thing, underworld, is translated as Hades, or translated as hell. Hades wasn't the name of the place. Hades was the chief god of the underworld. And the underworld wasn't a place where only the bad went. The underworld was a place where everybody went. And Hades was the god of it. In order to understand anything I'm going to talk about tonight, you have to understand that for us, the concept of death is abnormal. Otherwise, if you believe death is your normal state of being as a believer, then you will fall into the trap of thinking that you're going to be rewarded and be punished. You understand me?
No. Say that.
Yeah, it's like you're collecting good marks so that you'll go to heaven instead of going to hell.
Or whatever your view of reward and punishment is.
Yeah.
It'll translate it. I mean, you will uniquely define your hell based on your fear of whatever it is that's going to happen to you. I mean, like, if you're a sociopath like Daryl, then the only thing you fear is failure. You don't fear punishment. You fear totally different things than you know, a bisexual whore does, like this one. But when you play the game, when you play that game, you will define your own heaven and define your own hell. The Christian, our way of viewing is that death is the abnormal state, and that we have already been delivered from the power of that death. So there's no more possibility of either going to heaven or hell or reward and punishment. Those are the concepts that we left as the Gentile mind way back. Am I communicating?
What replaces, since there's no possibility of that, I mean, what replaces that? What is it?
Yes, you should be killed. What
is normal? If that concept is abnormal for us, what do we believe on this?
What's normal?
I'm sorry.
He understands.
Hey, it's only been 4 or 5 years.
Anyway, I'm not going to answer your question. The Greeks believed that it's the place where the souls that were separated from their bodies took refuge. Early beliefs had it on the edge of the horizon. You know, we talked about where you had to go rescue the golden apples at the edge of the horizon. Well, and they viewed this underworld as they viewed the earth as a place where this ocean, which is a rip, which was in their view really a river, sort of surrounded all the land. And then so they believed that the other side of the ocean was the underworld or the netherworld. But then some of their explorers went too far and found out there was just a regular old land over there, so they had to change their whole view of cosmology, and then they made the underworld under the world. And it was entered by, what? What?
The underworld, not the over there world.
Yeah. And it was entered by either these mysterious kind of caverns and caves, like, you know, we've seen in some of these mind episodes where the priests would take the initiates down into these terrible caverns with lanterns and paintings, or it was entered into by certain rivers. I believe that both the rivers and these caverns originated in the depths of the underworld. Now, few things grew in their concept of the underworld. They had a much better one than we do, by the way. We don't have anyone except sort of a vague kind of fear. But in their concept, few things grew. The soil was barren. No living being could survive in the underworld. The tree, the poplar. Poplar.
Cottonwood.
Similar to cottonwood. It's similar to cottonwood tree. What is it?
They're tall and skinny.
I know. But anyway, in this concept, they had black, they were all black. There was nothing on them except black. There were black poplars and black willows. That's why it's not cool, it's scary.
I know.
That's why it's cool.
Huh?
Because willows look like they're young anyway.
They're not happy trees.
All right, they're not happy trees. They're weeping willows because they're in hell. Huh? You never heard of a laughing willow. Weeping willow is what you hear of. The willows never bore fruit. What?
This is a weird night.
I know.
It's Harry's fault. It's a hellish night.
What?
It's a hellish night.
Yeah.
Gong.
Now, the ancients in their myth carefully describe the exterior appearance and the approaches to Hades, or to the underworld, but they were very, very vague about the interior of the place. But one thing was common to all the myths, the Greek myths, the actual physical place of the underworld was preceded by a vestibule called the Grove of Persephone. And it was a grove of dead trees that you had to pass through before you even got to the gates.
Kind of like in the Wuzhou.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I never saw it. But it's internally.
You
couldn't.
You're lost.
I'm not seeing a Christmas tree.
I've never seen the Wizard of Oz. Not only that, I have absolutely no intention of ever seeing the Wizard of Oz.
Oh,
that's great.
Now, this grove must be crossed before reaching the gate of the kingdom of Hades. At the gate was posted this evil, humongous monster dog. It was a watchdog. His name, he had, depending on which, who was telling the myth, he had anywhere from 3 to 50 heads. And he had a voice of bronze. Well, yeah, that's. Now, sometimes each follicle of hair on his body was a serpent. He bristled with serpents. And his mouth dribbled black venom. He was terribly ugly and terribly big and humongous and strong.
Sounds like White Johnson to me.
So,
that's an old joke. Very funny old joke. None of them Johnson boys.
Are you going to tell a joke?
No, it's too long. That's too much line, really. It might be better than this. You're not going to tell us the end of this story. Back to that.
Okay.
Now, what was this dog doing? Was he trying to keep people in or keep people out?
When entering the gate, the beast would appear very sort of prepossessing, and his bristles would be down. They looked just like hair, and, you know, wag its tail and its ears. He didn't lick you. Shut up, Jackie. You're really a sick woman.
Oh, dude. All three times at once.
But once you're in, never again could one come out. That's when the hair appeared to be snakes and the evil strength. No one ever, well, there's two people. Two people overcame Cerberus, but they were really a myth or a slice of the same person. One was Dionysus, or Dionysus, or however you pronounce his name, who rescued his mother from Hades. The other one was Hercules, who in both cases, I believe, we're talking about a picture of Christ. Now, Hercules vanquished the beast, defeated him, and carried this great beast up to the earth for just a moment and showed him. And it's a great mystery what he did and why he brought him up to the surface of the earth. Now, all around, because of this belief that the certain rivers, and they had the names of Lamentation, the rivers in the Greek name, I can't remember now, but one of them's name was Lamentation and Woe, and that they originated in Hades. But there were several rivers. But finally, there were nine loops. There was one river that had nine loops around Hades, or the underground, and it was called the River Styx. A lot of what we come up with in terms of Christian doctrine comes from the Hellenistic view of Greek mythology.
Yeah.
Yeah. An old ferryman, Charon, who is just sort of acerbic. What is that word? Is that a good word?
Yeah.
Really difficult to deal with.
Yeah. He's
painted
as
a irascible. Acerbic, irascible, huh?
Irascible.
Yeah, all his words. No. He was very difficult. He was just a difficult old man. You had to deal with him before you could cross the river. You had to satisfy him. But you wanted to cross the river, because if you didn't cross the river, you were condemned to wander in this never-never land, in the desolate shore.
People whose bodies were never buried had to never come across.
Right. Now, the guy, the only way he had to be sort of nice to him, and he had to sort of, you know, suck up to him. But he must be appeased at the final point with an obolus. And an obolus was a Greek coin. And so throughout Greece, they buried their dead with a coin in its mouth so he could make payment to the Charon. Now, again, you got to hear this. Unless he was buried, like a lot of the stuff that we believe in Christendom about burial came from this. You had to be buried. If you weren't buried with something for this ferryman, you were condemned to wander up and down the shores of this never-never land, which became, in Catholic theology, purgatory. Now, but concept of purgatory is still endemic to the Catholic mindset, except now they just don't sell indulgences anymore, which our new Pope here is very upset about. Huh? Yeah. Now there's all kinds of things. The River Styx was personified by a nymph, not a nymphomaniac, by a nymph. And she helped the Olympians in their battle with the Titans, and her reward was that immortals should swear by her name, and that would be irrevocable. And that's what, remember what happened with the thing we just studied. And there was another river that whoever drank of it forgot the past. Now this river separated the two regions of the underworld. It's like you had to drink of the water. The river was wide enough so that you couldn't get across it without drinking. So that, and this is important in terms of our concept of theology, you had to take at least one swallow before you crossed to the other side. The two regions were Tartarus and the Elysian Fields. And those were the two regions that separated the single underworld. Now, Tartarus was the section of Hades reserved for eternal punishment. But it was only, you had to be really bad to be in this. The only, I mean, it was like the Titans were there. The Titans, I believe, remember, in, you've studied myth, right?
Right.
The Olympians, the Olympus. What?
I said the Olympians.
No, the Titans and the Olympians were the two battlegrounds. Well, I believe the Titans were the pre-Adamic world that was recorded in myth. Now, all of the Titans are in Tartarus, or in the punishment section. And certain others are like bad Levites, right there in Tartarus. Huh? Yeah. And Herring. The Elysian Field represented the abode of the blessed. And there's all kinds of poetry.
So the idea was you wanted to swim to the other side of this, and if you couldn't make it, then you were condemned?
No.
Or, I'm not sure.
No, if it was only the only way you would stay in Tartarus was if you had offended the gods, and you had to be really bad.
Yeah.
For everyone else, it was possible to swim the river, and in swimming it, you would take a sip of the water, which would cause you to forget everything that had ever happened to you, including life on Earth. Mm-hmm. Now, there was another place that was sort of separate from the Elysian Fields that was called the Island, it was part of it, but sort of a little separate from it. It was called the Island of the Blessed, and that's where the super nice ones went, like rabbis and stuff. What? Popes went there. Those that are pure popes. Pure popes went there. No disc jockeys allowed.
We were with you.
I forgot where I was going.
That's right. We're still trying to suck up to the boat guy.
Now, the ruler of the underworld was a god, was one of the Olympians. It was called Hades. He was a god. He was the brother of Zeus. Hades was his name, and it means unseen. The word Hades in the Greek means that which is unseen. And the name itself evokes a mystery. It had another name. His name was Pluto.
Which means a goofing dog. Well, the joke is off.
Well, you're supposed to monitor that. Pope's is supposed to monitor.
Oh,
yeah, I forgot.
He's like the ferryman. He's going to cross the Tom with a silver
cake. Little obelisk. Give me some obelisk. Obelisk.
One of you is welcome at Harry's Mansion.
Isn't that a great word? Obelisk.
Kindly but crusty old Rex.
Charon Rex.
You can't listen to my foreign language.
That's right, we're going to broadcast foreign language 24 hours a day.
Now,
so is he like the dark side of Zeus? Are they like?
No, they're just two different names of the same guy.
He's just a guy. That's what he
just said. No, I mean,
Pluto and Hades are the same guy.
Oh, right. Is that guy like the dark side?
No, he's his brother.
Just a guy.
Now, Hades was happy in the underworld. I mean, he didn't want to be anyplace else. He was a king. He only left it twice, visibly. Once was to abduct Persephone, who we just talked about. And the other was to cure the wound from the arrow when Hercules shot him. Hercules shot him with his magic arrow in order to steal the dog. Well, he had to get something up in the earth, and he couldn't. Normally, but he went up a lot of times, but he had to have a helmet on. He had a particular helmet, and whenever he wore that helmet, he was invisible. Well, that helmet's name is Lee and Jackie. and Harry. And when he wears that helmet, he's invisible on Earth.
Wow. Can you see the helmet?
Uh-uh. Just looks like a regular old Rex. Didn't matter what kind of hat he had on, right? Hades was very little venerated. I mean, nobody. The only, you know how they prayed to Hades?
Why would you pray to him?
Well, because you're going
to
appease him and to. What you had to do is you had to beat the bare earth with your hand or beat it with a stick. That's how you prayed to Hades. His sacrifices were a black ewe or a black ram. And his sacred plants were the cypress and the narcissus. Now, once you died in Greek mythology, they only retained a pale reflection of their personhood. Physically, they were diaphanous and insubstantial. They had no being. That's where we get our idea of ghosts. Morally, they are also shadows. Their courage and intelligence disappeared at death. And only a very, very few lived as they had following the same occupation, like Hercules continued, and Minos was one of the judges, and he continued. But almost everybody else, it was this vague, vague uncertainty.
Well, they just wandered around.
Just wandered around. It took the form of a kind of a retirement home. And that's really the way it was thought of. Again, as only the outstandingly guilty ever suffered eternal punishment. Then little by little, primarily with Persian influence, the underworld came to be thought of not as a limbo, but as a place of judgment. And then that, now everything I've just described to you about the underworld in Greek mythology is exactly the same as the underworld in Hebrew, in Sheol. They had no, except there wasn't river Styx and there wasn't this. It was the place, Sheol was translated as the grave or pit or hell. Only one word for this underworld, but that's all it meant was underworld in the Old Testament. And it simply meant a place to be where the tribes were gathered. You can't, and I'm telling you, you'll never understand heaven or hell, and you'll never understand life or death until you see that your heritage isn't death. That you have been redeemed, delivered from already. Otherwise, you're going to spend the rest of your life pretending like that never happened. You understand? Yeah, and that's what it means to crucify the Son of God afresh. Okay. Now, on their, and again, we're talking back now on Greek mythology. Souls on their arrival appeared before a tribunal composed of Hades himself and three other judges or assessors. And after the judgment seat, they were sent either to three places: to Tartarus, to the Elysian Fields, or to the Island of the Blessed. Now, stop a minute and remember, those of you who have gone through Yom Kippur, on the day of, on Rosh Hashanah, three books are opened in heaven, in the Jewish New Year. The one book is for the really bad, doesn't have very many people in it. One book is for the really good, doesn't have very many people in it. And then one book is for the rest of us. That the days of awe between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are the days of quote-unquote repentance. I.e., so that you are... I'm not communicating what I want to communicate. The only way I can talk about this is you have to go back to... like if you never even heard or thought about the concept of heaven or hell, and that your idea of it is totally unknown. I mean, you haven't, it's like there's no possibility of even perceiving of heaven or hell. Because otherwise you will, the words themselves will be prejudiced by all of your experience. What I'm telling you is that the Greek concept of hell and the Hebrew concept of hell were the same. It had nothing to do with the place of being punished. The place of being punished, the concept of being punished, only comes in after Jesus Christ is manifested. Do you understand that? You're not understanding me.
Well, is this the same as the Egyptians? They didn't have a place of punishment.
If I had not spoken to you, you would have had cloaked for your sin, or whatever that thing is that he's saying.
Had I not spoken unto you, you would have been without sin, but now you have no cloak.
Okay. So that's what you're saying. When he entered in, then all of a sudden there was sin. There was no cloak for
because
that.
The sin was not to see the finishedness. That's the only sin. That's the only mistake. That's the only error. That's the only... Okay. Now, a lot of things... You understand the three places, Tartarus, Elysian Fields, and the Island of the Blessed. Very few in Tartarus. Bunches in the Elysian Fields, and very few in the Island of the Blessed.
But like in Tartarus, it's not punishment.
It isn't punishment. It is.
Oh, it is.
Well, it's a bad place. I mean, it's like... But it's not punishment like you think of. It's like Tantalus, who was one of the gods that screwed up. I mean, one of the guys that screwed up. He spent a lifetime simply there, and he hungered and thirsted for eternity. Sisyphus, he continually rolled a rock up a hill. The Danaids, that's a group of people, all they did was continually fill bottomless barrels. Ixion, how do you pronounce it? I-X-I-O-N? Anyway, however you pronounce it. He was bound to a flaming wheel. But it's not punishment in the context of, the idea is that it's continuance.
It's an eternity of continuance.
Of continuance.
It sounds like
hopelessness.
It sounds like this.
Well, it's this. It's continuance. Now, one time I gave a talk, and I defined hell as an eternity spent. With a perception, huh?
Eternity spent self-seeking with an accusing heart.
That's what I said.
You guys know well.
That sounds like terrestrial.
Okay. And let me go on. Some of the things around Hades. Hades has some buddies. One is called Thanatos or Thanatos, death. And death, Thanatos or death, is the god or the being that supplied Hades with its subjects. Hypnos, H-Y-P-N-O-S, was sleep. And that was the brother of death. Then he had these two weird groups, the Keres and the Erinyes. Erinyes, anyway, one of those guys. But the Keres, they executed the will of Thantos. They're the ones that wiped you out, like when they executed the will of the fates. When it was time for you to go, then one of these little guys would come along and whap you.
So they like ran between the underworld and earth?
Yeah. And the Erinyes were the black goddesses, and there were three of them, and their function was punishment. And they would make you sick. And now, both of those groups together are called the hounds of hell. They're what chase you around. They're the hounds. They're not hounds, but they're called the hounds of hell, and they're like Cerberus's minions. Now that's all sort of a thumbnail sketch of the Greek or Hellenistic view of the underworld, or what happens to you after death. It's unclear. It's vague. The same as the Hebrew place. The Hebrew, again, I said that there's only one word in Hebrew for the pit, grave, hell, and it's Sheol, S-H-E-O-L. It simply means the unseen world or the state of being dead. It didn't have a place attached to it. And it's what takes place when life is ended and the tribes are gathered in their families. Now, that's why we have been infected with the Persian view of duality, and it's affected our view of the Old Testament, it's affected our view of the New Testament, it's affected our view of life. And the idea is in this duality that there is, that God has some competition. And that because you believe that God has competition, if you believe by definition he has competition, then you believe he can be bested. And if you believe he can be bested as a small child, then it's a very stupid thing to believe in God. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So therefore, the Persian duality phenomena came into being, and it caused a whole, I mean, it caused agnosticism. You can't believe in God if you believe God can be bested. You're stupid to believe in God. And so what has happened, and what I hope to do with this, is to give you an understanding of what Hercules did when he took this dog, and just for an instant in time, the Cerberus, and an instant in time, and no, they don't know why, but for an instant, he brought the dog up to the face of the earth. Okay? Let's go to Ephesians 5.
What does that do to the dog?
He barked a lot.
Did he go blind or anything?
No, he didn't do anything. Ephesians 4. Well, let's go to 3:14.
Sure. Now let's go to 3:1. Oh, no.
This is a prayer of Paul's. Now remember, Paul, you gotta believe that the Greeks at this time were the major influence. I mean, their influence was still felt. The Roman Empire had begun already, but the Greeks are what had fundamentally influenced thought and culture in the whole of the Roman Empire, in the whole of the known world. All of the stuff I just told you was taken for granted by everybody, even the Hebrews, because the Hebrews, they called it the Hellenistic view of Hebrew. There was a temple built in Alexandria that rivaled the temple in Herod's time, or Herod's temple in Jerusalem. The greatest thinkers of the world were in Alexandria, and it permeated everything. So what I just got through telling you was the overview of life in the society that Paul knew. Understand? All right. So now in Ephesians 3, starting in verse 14, it's a prayer. He's praying. And he says, "For this cause I bow my knees unto the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named, that he would grant you let me go back. I went over this. The Lord Jesus Christ, of whom the whole family in heaven and earth is named. I mean, that doesn't exclude anybody. That he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man. That Christ may fully dwell, is what it says, in your hearts by faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love," and here's what the prayer is, "may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, that you might be filled with all the fullness of God. Now unto him that is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be glory in the church by Christ Jesus throughout all ages, world without end. Amen." Okay, that was sort of the prayer, that you would be strengthened to know what the height, the depth, the breadth, the length, the dimensions I, therefore, the prisoner, and 4:1. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called. There's only one vocation. It has nothing to do with whether you're a teacher or a, anyway.
I don't understand prisoner of the Lord.
Well, don't you understand? You're a bond slave. You're a prison. You can be nothing else but his.
Okay.
With all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body, one Spirit, even as you are called, in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. But unto every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. Wherefore he saith, when he ascendeth up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts unto men. Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth? He that descended is the same also that ascended far above all heavens, that he might fulfill or fill all things. Now, my theory, again, since Paul quoted Aratus before, he was fully aware of all of this stuff. And when he talks about, I challenge you to find anywhere in the scriptures where it says, wherefore he saith, he's quoting somebody. Find out where that quote comes from. I'll give you $1,000 if you can find it. Except from the myth of Hercules descending in and leading captivity, who is the monster dog, captive, and giving by that act gifts unto men.
Well, it's done before.
Huh?
He referred to Hercules before.
I know.
Without calling him Hercules.
He was talking to the Ephesians.
Yeah, he's talking the same way.
You understand? He led captivity captive. I challenge any theologian to tell me what that means without reference to this. The point, what does that mean to you? The first thing it means is that you can move in and out of hell. You never have to worry about it. You never have to give it any breath. You move in and out. Now, the Christian concept of hell is something totally different. In the Christian mind, hell is Gehenna. You understand that? What's the New Testament? Gehenna is ha in the Hebrew. If you said Gehenna in Hebrew, it's ha hinnon. Ha, the hinnon, valley. It's the valley that's outside the east gate of the New Jerusalem. You're either in the New Jerusalem or you're outside of it. You're either in it or you're in heaven now. Or in hell, you're in hell now. There's no going someplace. Because he has already led captivity captive. And he gave that gift unto man. There's no more concern or thought for reward, punishment, life after death. That's all for the idiots. You understand me? I don't think I've communicated what this means.
Yeah,
there's something kind of like something you said really rang a bell in my head when you were talking about some of the gods that were captive in that place, Tartarus, sorry. You mentioned one in particular, Sisyphus. That's the one that I remember, but there are others. It's an extremely widely accepted theory, and it's similar to our high place thing, that life plans, life scripts, these underlying things that you can see in familiar relationships, a person's script for his life, is based on people like Sisyphus.
No, I know, yeah, that's...
And specifically those Greek gods that have the same repetitive, fruitless, vain activities, which that really jives with what you just said in that we have the ability to walk in and out of that vanity, that eternal vanity.
See, the problem with teaching, I'd pray for the clarity of teaching at the time of Paul. When your life was constantly beset by beasts and the ravages of the world and the weather and wars and everything else, where there's, but now it's just so fucking gray. And there's no, you know, things don't mean a goddamn thing. You know, your life, if you're gonna, the state, the government is slowly but surely providing you, and everything that's happening is you no longer have the right to really fail. And as long as you don't have the capacity to really fail, you can never know the fear of God. And so you live in this never, never bullshit. And so the meanings that the excitement that someone could come to you and say that he has led captivity captive and you can go in and out at will matters not. If this was said 2,000 years ago, there'd be people dancing in the streets. But here it's, I mean, do you understand the challenge of preaching and teaching to lukewarm? Can you? He led captivity captive. Death is gone. Death, the victory of death is forever banished. Uh-huh. Let's have another cup of coffee. Go to Psalm 139. Starting verse 6. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. If I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. Not there as some mystical presence, but there as a reality. You may... Number two, we're too jaded to understand. We're too, our senses have been so exercised that it's got to take the rocks falling on us before we believe. Thinking these stuff. Take it, big guy. I'm pissed.